Well, the hardy crew has left before break. Thanks for sticking around. So basically, I'm just going to tell you a quick story about what's going on in Arizona and maybe highlight what's different about our situation compared to a lot of what you've heard today about from the southeastern U.S. I showed this slide the last year or the year before. We first discovered glyphosate-resistant palm amaranth in Buckeye area, which is west of the Phoenix metropolitan area, in July of 2012. We collected seed from those plants and conducted assays in the greenhouse and confirmed that they were indeed resistant, highly resistant, about 50 times more resistant than the susceptible population. In the 2013 season, we saw some other fields in the Buckeye area. I outlined a couple in yellow in this several square mile area where we saw differential response to early season glyphosate applications. All the way from no response at all to chlorosis to, of course, that small portion of the population of resistant progeny of resistant parents that die. And we conducted a series of greenhouse tests. Growth inhibition is on the vertical axis against glyphosate rate on the horizontal axis. The green line is the Saharita palmer population, which is our known susceptible population, compared against three other populations from the Buckeye area. So we see some fields that are not yet converted to resistant palmer amaranth populations and other fields where they're highly resistant. That population in the Buckeye area is also resistant to ALS inhibitor herbicides. The top panel is the Saharita population, which is also resistant to staple and raptor. And the bottom panel is the Buckeye population. This is actually a big problem for our alfalfa producers because they have far fewer options than our cotton producers do for topical or over-the-top broadleaf weed control options. And we've done greenhouse inhibition curves like the one shown here. The red line is the Buckeye population, and you can see over an extended range of staple there is a differential response that leads to field level resistance. So I showed this slide last year and made the comment that we had this one known population in Buckeye highlighted in the red circle. You can see the Phoenix metropolitan area there, top center. And down in the lower right corner is Marana and Picacho Peak, where I got called out to take a look at some suspected palmer populations. We sprayed it in the field with high rates of glyphosate, and they died, so I thought we were free and clear down there. I did get one call from a PCA in the fall from the Santan Valley talking about palmer escapes in alfalfa, but that was in response to the application of Raptor in Pursuit. So I was still sort of optimistic that the geographical separation of our cotton-producing areas might limit the spread of this problem. This is the field in Santan Valley, southeast of Phoenix, and you can see isolated palmer amaranth plants in that field that are clearly escaping treatment. They range all the way from plants that look pretty healthy green to those that are pretty severely affected. It's actually hard to see the dead ones in there. And this is what the field looked like in 2014. So you can see there was a tremendous loss of alfalfa density in that field, and that's a huge problem for that first cutting of alfalfa in the spring of 2014. Like I said before, palmer's probably a bigger problem for our alfalfa producers than it is for our cotton producers. We did collect seed from those populations. The green line, again, is our known susceptible palmer amaranth population from Saharita, which is way down south by Nogales along the Mexican border, where they don't use glyphosate we don't have any crop production there. It's cattle ranching. Anyway, you can see from those Santan Valley palmer populations, quite a bit of variation in the response to the ALS inhibitor herbicides, kind of like this population is developing independently of what's going on elsewhere. And in fact, these populations were not resistant to glyphosate, so clearly different than the Buckeye population. Well, fast forward to this summer, end of this year, or 2014, and the population of picacho that we were worried about has escaped several applications of glyphosate in a pecan orchard. We've collected seed, but I'm pretty sure that's resistant. And the Marana population is definitely resistant. The field populations have been sprayed four times with Roundup to no effect. You go out and you see scapes scattered through the field and along the field edge. You look at individual plants. Some are unaffected. Some show some minor symptomology from glyphosate, but they're going ahead and flowering and are going to produce pollen and seed. And we also have another population in the southeastern corner of the state, about 100 miles southeast of Marana, where we've got Roundup Ready corn grown in center pivots, and we've got glyphosate populations that are escaping treatment. So a year later, compared to last year, this year, I'm pretty sure Arizona's not going to escape the fate of many other areas of the country. Glyphosate-resistant Palmer is going to become widespread. I think the gene is out there in several locations. It just takes time to get expressed in those local populations after it shows up. So we'll see what happens. Palmer is ubiquitous. It's native to our part of the country, the Sonoran Desert. That's where we live. It's ideally suited to our environmental conditions. It grows along roadsides, every low drainage points, all riparian areas. It grows on berms in alfalfa fields. Our farming systems are all laser leveled and irrigated, either flood irrigated or furrow irrigation for the most part. And we have these berms in our alfalfa fields that just become infested with Palmer. So that's a problem. We have a robust dairy industry that's growing corn and sorghum for feed, and they're not real concerned about weed control. And you look at those fields, they're overrun with Palmer. So it's just everywhere. So the real challenge is, how are we going to get our producers to use a diversity of tools to manage Palmer, especially when what we're asking them to do is more expensive than what they have been doing. The first recommendation we've had is to put a DNA in their weed management program. This is a slide I've shown before where we don't apply prowl at one of our experiment stations in a weed nursery. You can see the Palmer population out there. But 2 quarts of prowl H2O does a phenomenal job, probably works better than any other part of the U.S. in our environment. Our soils are totally different than what is going on in the southeastern U.S. They're alkaline, pHs of 8. They're sandy loams for the most part. We get excellent control. In fact, in this little picture on the right, most of those weed plants you see outside the cotton row are annual morning glories. This is just a graph from some older data showing, in red, Palmer emergence. The control is on the bottom. You can see about 80 plants per meter squared. And you look at the pendimethalin and trifluralin applied either on the flat and incorporated with the disc prior to listing or with a mulcher after listing. We get excellent Palmer control from our DNA herbicides, and it's the backbone for us. And it works much better than trying to go in and make a topical application of something like dual magnum or post direct on small cotton after the season has started. We've done studies like this one here where we go out on fallow beds and just spray the herbicides I've listed in the treatment column and then irrigate to incorporate. And you can see, compared to the untreated check on the bottom line, how well those treatments work on Palmer amaranth. The last column on the right, you know, we've got 40 plants per square foot in the untreated, and look at those numbers for Diuron and Promotrine, which is Caprol. All these treatments are highly effective, including Clarity. Of course, the Clarity and the Dual Magnum, this data was collected 21 days after treatment. We're just about to the end of their efficacy, but the Diuron and the Caprol and the Prowl will go several weeks longer. We've also done individual plant studies looking at the application of dicamba, glufosinate, glyphosate and pyrethiobac for Palmer amaranth control. One such weed study is shown here. And so these are some of the application parameters that we used 20 gallons per acre, appropriate adjuvants, either AMS or Montan, and non-ionic surfactant where needed. Under the environmental conditions, I've listed the temperature. 97 is actually fairly cool. It was a cool day on this application date. More typical temperature is 110. Humidity is 26%. That's high for us. Humidity for us in April, May, and June will be about 14% in the morning and about 4% in the afternoon. This is relevant to the efficacy of glyphosate or glufosinate I'm going to show you in a moment. We treated Palmer amaranth at two different growth stages that we called large and small, 11 to 14 nodes, which is still a fairly small plant, and 18 to 22 nodes. This is 4 days after treatment with the treatments indicated on the horizontal axis. The numbers are either pounds AE or AI per acre, and you can see some difference in the treatments with Staple and Clarity lagging behind the symptomology development in the other treatments, but by the time you get to 12 days after treatment, they're all working pretty well, as shown on the vertical axis, with phytotoxicity ratings of 9 or better for the most part. And these are just some pictures. In the upper left is the size of the Palmer that we sprayed. Pretty large plant, actually, although we're calling it small for the dicamba at half a pound. 12 days later, over on the right, the top panel, you can see the carcass at the bottom of the wire flag, barely. But, you know, you do get some escapes, and they look like the one in the bottom right panel. So we certainly wouldn't advocate spraying plants this size. And this is the large plants. Over on the left, you can see there's some variation in response all the way from complete death to just laying them down on the ground and stopping their growth, and they twist up. So obviously, we need to be using dicamba as a part of a program with multiple herbicides, and we definitely don't want to be spraying plants that large. Dicamba and glyphosate on a Palmer population that is susceptible to Roundup is a scorched earth kind of treatment, which is kind of scary because, you know, I worry about growers seeing that when they get this technology in their hands and wondering why they should be spending money on all these other herbicides when this works so well. And glufosinate worked pretty well in this study. We were spraying the herbicides in early September, again during our summer monsoon season. We don't see this kind of efficacy in the spring when it's drier. These are the large plants. It was even pretty effective, shown on the left compared to the untreated on the right. That 0.79 pound AE per acre is 43 ounces. This is more typical of what we see from our glufosinate applications when we make them at the beginning of June. We fry off the leaves, the stems stay green, and they eventually grow. So we have to spray really small Palmer in the spring if we're using glufosinate. But there's what dicamba and glufosinate did as a tank mix on large plants. Pretty effective. So in summary, you know, our message to growers is you've got to be proactive, pay attention to sanitation. In fact, the two primary responses growers have made to this problem is, one, put the DNAs back into their weed management program at a cost of about $5 an acre, and the other is they scout more effectively, and they go out and physically remove the few scattered plants that survive. Their Roundup applications have not seen a wholesale shift away from Roundup Ready technology. Dicamba resistance is going to be a really valuable tool to us. We're pretty lucky in that that's coming to market pretty quickly after we've developed a problem. But we're definitely going to need to get some tank mixtures and some herbicide diversity in our weed management programs. And that's all I got for you. If there's any questions, I'll answer them. Otherwise, we can go get some coffee.
We got time for a few questions?
Some other projects, and what growers are doing is they've all built machines or are in the process of building machines now to go out and treat those berms and incorporate a residual herbicide, typically Prowl, or just use tillage. They've gotten a lot more proactive about managing it.
So if you just
would say that's what most of our growers are doing. Yeah. 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 You know, the DNAs are taking out 95%+ of the Palmer. We've got one early season cultivation taking out another huge fraction. Not all the plants are resistant. Doesn't leave very many plants in the field if you're willing to force your irrigators to go out there with a shovel and chop them down. Everybody's got a shovel now, and the irrigators know to keep their job. They've got to go out there and knock those things down.
Yeah, the smartest guy is the one that kills the person.
Exactly right. That's actually the main point of my message, you know, to growers, is keep that seed bank population low, and you can continue on as you've been going for a long time. It is. Sort of an interesting aside. Staple doesn't work very well pre for us in that alkaline pH environment of the soil. In the bottom of the furrow, you can see a little bit of suppression, but on the bed tops where the cotton seed line is, we don't get any pre-emergent staple control. Anything else?
Well, let's thank our speaker.